This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 a.m. It's Monday. It's time for more talk radio with your host, Cecil Prescott. Will Celeste chime in as well? We'll find out. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Kudos to our engineer, Sonia, for finding our theme song, because there's been a lot of changes popping up unexpectedly since COVID, you know, COVID. What's the phrase? Because COVID.
Because of COVID, yeah. New word for 2020.
Oh, my goodness. Did you see that video I sent you, that ad?
No. I did not watch it.
Oh, my goodness, you have to watch it. So first, before I get off into one of my tangents and take all of you down the rabbit hole with me, you are listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metropolitan area. If you are listening in Philomath and points south along the Willamette River Valley, it's 104.3. In the Columbia River Gorge, Hood River, Oregon, White Salmon, Washington, it is 91.9, and you know the drill. Everywhere in the ether, it is KBOO.FM. Okay. Now, having said that, you are listening to More Talk Radio. I am one of your hosts, but, you know, courtesy dictates that you always say the other person first. and that be my cohort in crime, Cecil Prescott. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Celeste Carey, my cohort.
All right. So we have a show that is going to highlight some of the Portland nonprofit and service organizations here in the Portland area, which are doing good, which are giving back to Portland, which is kind of the theme for the 2020 Willamette Week Give Guide fundraising campaign. And KBOO itself is honored in that this is our fifth straight year that we have been an honored guest of the Willamette Week Give Guide. Now, why is that important? Well, I'm going to assume that some of you don't listen to KBOO as much as you should, and I'm going to be very non-judgmental about that. I'm just going to say welcome. But it's important because there are a lot of organizations that are vying for your money, and some groups have been gathered by various organizations like the Willamette Week, and they're showcased. And they're showcased because the Willamette Week and the Give Guide effort feel that these groups merit some notice. KBOO has to go a little step further because we're a community connector. And being a community connector, the expectation is, you know, to those whom much is given, much is required. We step out a little bit more because we have your ear in our airways. And say a little bit of information, give a little bit of kudos to the other organizations that are doing something in our metro area to make life astounding, rich, noteworthy, and thriving and sustainable. So to that end, today we're going to be talking to two groups, and we have a chance to extend these interviews because we're spreading them out over the rest of December, and so we're going to take a little bit of extra time to have a conversation with these groups. So now I've done my share of talking. Let me shut up and let Cecil talk.
Our first group that we'll highlight is an organization that's called Mother and Child Education Center. And they are an organization that creates connection in a judgment-free space to provide support, education, and resources for anyone who is parenting, including expectant mothers, fathers, and those facing challenges such as lack of housing, poverty, substance abuse, and other trauma. So we have the opportunity to speak with their executive director, Maura White, and a great engineer will get Maura connected to us, and we'll have a conversation with her about their organization.
We have Maura on the line, ready to go.
Excellent. Thank you, Sonia. Good morning, Maura. How are you doing? Or as we say, top of the morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
It has been a long time. I had no idea that you were so engaged in other aspects of community service and nonprofit organizations. And so I was tickled to learn a whole lot more about someone that I've had the pleasure of working with some years ago in another community service venture. So it's good to hear from you.
I thought the same thing when I saw it was you. I'm like, oh my goodness, life just keeps going around in circles when you're doing good in the community, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been here at KBOO for almost 32 years.
Yep.
I got here in 89, so it was one of the first community ventures I did when I transferred here with my job. Years ago in another life, I used to work for Federal Express. And then concurrently, I started doing other nonprofit work. And so for me, this is kind of like my home away from home. You know, the job that's your fun job. It doesn't pay the bills, but it gets the work done.
Absolutely. I love KBOO.
Well, thanks. Tell me a little bit about this new venture of yours and how you came to switch to a very significant part of community development, which is family stability. I have a background in nursing, and so just seeing what you have done and what you're doing to me is fascinating, and it's so important here in Portland. Actually, this is important anywhere, but yeah,
Portland. It really is. And we have a lot of nurses involved with us. We're totally community health. And so I transitioned because, you know what, I realized that if I was going to help make a difference in the community, it had to start with when babies were in the womb and right after. You know, it's so crucial, that time when moms are pregnant up to their five. If we could provide support there, those kids were going to have the chance to not have these adverse situations were happening when they were young. And so I like this, it just was a calling for me. And so for me now, I took it from this little teeny organization to being community connected to literally, we have must have 80 partners we work with. I mean, Healthy Black Initiatives, I mean, so many programs. And so we're just really here to try to make sure that people have hope, supplies, and the support they need to actually have a healthy life, the kind of life they want to, you know?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, one of the things that I want to celebrate is something you said initially, and that is deal with the root, you know, a root cause. And anyone who's ever worked in the healthcare field knows that, you know, palliative care is one thing, but if you can get down to the root challenges, that's what makes a big difference. And you said you work with different groups, and I think you mentioned Healthy Birth Initiative.
Yes.
And I remember working with them many, many years ago when I was with AmeriCorps.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what got you interested in this group and you kind of summed it up in a way, but what are the specific things that just galvanized you about this particular group and sure. brought you there to help nurture it into the bigger player that it is now?
Well, yeah, sure. So there's this big hole kind of in the community sometimes that we like to help fill, and I felt that. So there's a lot of programs out there that have a lot of paperwork, a lot of hoops to jump through, a lot of things you have to do to get support. We are literally a grassroots organization, despite celebrating 50 years next year, where you can literally walk in the door and get support. You can call us and get support. Definitely, we'll talk more about what we've changed in the pandemic. But people can come to us wherever their walk in life is. We're not going to judge them. I think that is probably the biggest thing. We have people who are barely in recovery, who are homeless, or maybe have made some really poor choices in life. We don't care about that. All we care about is giving them hope, love, and support. So we do everything from the kind of getting prenatal vitamins to food, if that's what they need, connecting them with somewhere to get housing for them. So everybody's different. So we're not a one-size-fits-all at all. We literally assess the person. I'm the one that, like, troubleshoots kind of the hardest cases, you know, where, because I know so many people, I've done this for 30 years, so I'm the one that helps, you know, troubleshoot where they need to go. But we're there, I mean, maybe it's just they wanted a beautiful quilt that it was handmade. They'd never had a handmade quilt for their baby. Or maybe it's they need to get a connection to get into a housing program. So I guess what drew me to this is that we have the power and the ability to actually make a difference. We just had a mom the other day that came by. Literally, we met with her one time for 2 hours. She came by a year and a half later saying, you know what, we're the only people who accepted her for who she was. And she ended up getting housing. She has a job now. And she just came back to said, can I hug you? I just need to tell you, you love me when I need it the most. And now my life is so different. Literally, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, it's really important that you get a place where people can come in and have no judgments and ask any question, no matter how stupid it sounds, because there's no guides to come with raising a child. There's no guides to come with, I've got a child, but I lost my job. What do I do next? You know, and so it's really important that we have this kind of support in the community.
Oh, yeah, and the new rules, like safe sleep, we have a great partnership with OHSU. So a lot of, you know, people, we work with a lot of people who are homeless or couch surfing, and so they don't really have a safe place for baby to sleep. And so we work with OHSU. We can provide a class, and they get a free, really nice, brand new, it's a pack and play with a thing on top. And so their baby has somewhere safe to sleep no matter where they are. We even have the safety boxes. If you're living in a car, we're not judging you. We actually have a box the baby can sleep in. We want them to not have to live in a car, but we've got to do what steps we can and connect them with others to help too, you know?
Excellent, excellent. You are listening to More Talk Radio. This is your community connection, KBOO. Today we're speaking with Mara White, who is the Executive Director of Mother and Child, one of the Give Guide participants for the fundraising campaign 2020 here in Portland and above and beyond. We do have the line open if you want to ask questions. And Mara, can I impose upon you to get a little bit more of your time? We didn't have quite as many of the interviewees able to meet today, and so we had a little extra time. We want to try to showcase you a little bit more in depth. So would that work for you if we get called?
My goodness, I love that.
Ah, good, good, good. Glad to be a servant. So the phone number is 503-231-8187, and we welcome your calls and hope that you'll take advantage of this opportunity to learn more about Mother and Child and support them.
Celeste, may I hold you for just a second, because all
sure.
of the lines are being occupied, so we are unable to take calls at this time.
Oh, that's right. I forgot, in this age of COVID, sometimes we can't duplex. Okay.
Well, so, you know, during this COVID time, you know, we have absolutely had to shift, you know, and pivot how we serve, which has kind of been a challenge for us, but we still do it, you know.
Yes, indeed. So, speaking of in this COVID time and pivoting and shifting, what has been some of the biggest challenges you've met, will face and met during our COVID shut-in series?
Sure. For us, the biggest challenge has been that people can't come into our house. So our center is a renovated old house. It's beautiful. We just had to paint it blue recently. And so they can't come inside. We serve them on the front porch, and we've actually set up appointments to come. So a challenge is that, you know, the little kids can't come in and pick out the old toys they want, their own books they want. They can't sit. The moms can't sit and drink tea with us and talk about their challenges. We've got to do it on the front porch. So that's a challenge. But on the flip side, that challenge has also allowed us to actually serve them better in some ways. We actually talk to them more. We're out on the front porch. We call everybody much more. We it's just hard not to be able to have them inside. I mean, I used to make, you know, once a month we have a client care day, and I literally served food for 120 people. I cooked up the breakfast, the pancakes, scrambled eggs. People came in, our volunteers. I mean, we just can't have volunteers on site. So it's been a real challenge for that, you know. But we've adapted. And obviously, those appointments have worked out really well. I mean, it means everyone has space for COVID, you know, so no one's interacting, you know, separately. They're not all on the porch at the same time. And so we're being safe. But we miss our volunteers, and we miss having clients sit on our, you know, couch with us and chatting and holding babies.
Indeed. Cecil, Mara and I are taking up all the space. So let me step down for a moment so you can, you know, you can engage.
Well, thank you so much, and I'm so excited to hear about Mother and Child Education Center. How do people find you? How do they connect with you? You mentioned, you know, it's an open space for anyone. Where are you physically located, and how may people connect up with you?
So we start. Okay, great. And so we're located in Northeast Portland. We are right across from Trader Joe's in the Hollywood District. So we're right off of the Hollywood Mac Center. And people connect with us in so many ways. A lot of it is word of mouth. People know about us and that they know they can trust us. I mean, there's people, you know, for example, who maybe don't have the right status as far as like immigration status. We don't do anything. We don't turn people in. We don't, you know, turn them into anything. And so word of mouth is huge. We work with the recovery community a lot, so things like Project Network, Letty Owens Center, all of those centers who help those moms get their kids back in their care, we work with them. Healthy Birth Initiatives, Nurse Family Partnerships. So a lot of those frontline people that are working, they know that we have more flexibility. You know, there's, again, like I said, yeah. I mean, we follow HIPAA, don't worry, we follow the law, but, you know, but a lot of those organizations, they can't, for example, provide a crib or a stroller like we can. And so they send their clients to us or call ahead of time, and they get them to us. We are constantly, we serve more than 2,400, you know, moms and families, single dads a year, mostly word of mouth, honestly.
Wow, that's amazing. And what I find so exciting is that it seems as if your organization is one that makes it easier for those who are often frustrated by the bureaucracy.
Yes. And oh, yes.
And it seems as if, you know, people can walk in and don't have to worry about filling out a thousand sheets and jumping through all the hoops, and you make it possible for people to receive the needed services.
And that is really, I think, what we do. And we let, like, so if someone comes and they don't speak our language, we're fine if their 8-year-old child needs to translate for them. You know, I mean, it brings me joy in my heart to know that sometimes it's the one food box we can give, or, you know, this one joyous thing happened. If I could just share it, oh my gosh. So, you know, we're funded, you know, by just donations, grants, but we got a partnership with the city to actually provide some of that COVID support. And our families, we told them, we had 54 families we helped. And we just said, hey, we have a holiday surprise for you if you can come in. We handpicked them. We knew who needed it the most. And they just came because they trusted us. We didn't say what they were getting. We just said, oh, it's a holiday surprise. And they said, great. And they came, and some of them got $250. Some got $500. And I mean, the tears of joy that we had on that day, the city folks said they'd never seen anything like it. They're like, this is amazing, Maura. Like, and they actually got to pay their rent. Or they paid, and they didn't lose their homes. They actually had, I mean, it was, I'm telling you, my heart was so full. We just got to do that 2 weeks ago, and my interns, my little college interns, they were like, I've never been involved in something so magical. $22,000 worth. And we didn't have that kind of money. We're super grassroots, you know, but it was straight from the city. And gosh, you guys, it was so amazing. I mean, that kind of, so making that kind of difference specifically, and the people that we got, the 54 families, they wouldn't have it access other places. They didn't get it from WIC. They didn't get it from DHS. They got it from us, and they had no other way of accessing that.
Wow, that's simply amazing. How might people connect with you? And I'm certain you would like, we're featuring you in part because it's a great organization. How might people participate or support you?
Well, sure. And so we help. So recently, because of Alignment Week, I had these cool young interns. They're like 23, you know, and they're all hip. They get the whole social media thing. And so on Instagram, our girl Lily, so she has created this Instagram for us, Mom Child PDX. And, you know, every week we have a different educational theme, how toddler discipline, how to save sleep, and all these educational things. Plus on there, there's a chance to give, of course. But our Instagram is super educational. Same with our Facebook, Mom Child PDX. That's how we keep people informed. We have an Amazon wish list, which is amazing. And, you know, for us, it's simple things like we need diapers and wipes. I mean, those are the things that, you know, if a family's out there struggling, you know, the last thing, I mean, diapers are expensive, you know. Formula is expensive. And we're lucky with partnerships like Broadway Medical that they give us formula. But so Amazon wish list, you can find us on Facebook, you can call us. It's hard right now with volunteers. We miss our volunteers. I mean, we rely on them to sort through donations. We take in-kind donations. So if you have clothing, 0 to 5 years old, or we have a real need, this is something, but for large and extra large maternity clothes. We have a lot of smaller women that love to donate, but we need some bigger women out there to donate us, okay? mm-hmm. But they can call us at any time, too. I mean, we're super accessible. And if they do, you know what? Trader Joe's is a partner, and they give us flowers, Dale's flowers, 4 days a week. And sometimes our moms say that is the first time they've ever had a gift of flowers in their life.
Oh, that is sweet. That is sweet. So you're not only lifting folks up, in terms of their physical condition, but you make sure you do that emotional and spiritual lift as well. And that's so important for any parent, whether they're struggling or they're stable. So, you know, I have a question here, and it has to do with people recognizing how organizations work together. It sounds like you are kind of like glue to fill in some of the basics that maybe a larger organization doesn't necessarily focus on for various legitimate reasons, or is too time consuming. And being grassroots, you can probably move a lot. But here's a question: with so many partners, how do you avoid client duplication, and then how has your organization help amplify the efforts of other health organizations? Because it sounds like you're like a niche organization in that you focus on a special need, but at the same time, it helps knit not only the people who need your services, mm-hmm. but it knits other organizations together. How do you avoid those serving the same people? So the money really is, it gets that out there. It gets out there.
I have to say that's probably one of my specialties. So because we know our clients so well and we understand them, even when they sign up, for example, for like to come getting Christmas toys, for example, and we send out, are you getting stuff for other people? Well, if you're already getting it from Salvation Army, says, okay, you need to give this up for somebody else because, you know, what the other people needed. Or like when we were able to do that program where we actually got cards out, some of our, 10 of our clients signed up again to get gifts, and we went back to them and said, you know what? No, you got something from us. We got 10 other people that need this, you know. And then with all the other groups we work with, we share so much. We have, like, ROIs, called release of information, that we really know what others are doing, and so we share. And what's nice, too, is, like, for example, Providence has a program called the Beginnings Project, and they work with at-risk moms, first-time moms, and so they, because they're so thankful to us, they end up doing their own fundraisers for us. Like, they get strollers and all those kind of things to bring to us to say thanks and share. And so we kind of, we share information in an informal way, but legal, of course, so that we really know that. And so we send people to the groups. Like, Naya will call us, and they have, like, these three clients. They we cannot get their needs met. Oh, great, we can, no problem. Bring them over to us, you know. And so we have that kind of, we call them warm handoffs. So we have these warm handoffs where we'll hand off someone to them or they'll hand them off to us. And so, it's, you know, I look at it like if you do the Oregon Trail kind of thing, I look at it, one of those big wagon wheels, and we're the thing that spoke. There's all these little spokes off of there, and kind of all of us are connected. And I just have that personality, I'm not trying, you know, that where we just kind of figure out how we connect. And I've been in the community for so long and connected for so long that I kind of know a lot of the programs, know how to make it work. And so I think that's how we do it. We have such great relationships with so many community health programs, and also, quite honestly, with the colleges. I mean, right now I have I've had interns from University of Georgia. She was just here. Tulane University, Scripps, Oregon State, Portland State, Warner Pacific. We're kind of a spot where college kids want to come, and we have to actually turn kids away. They don't get paid. They just get to be part of our process, and it's a blessing. I mean, it is an absolute blessing, the kind of energy we get from these young kids. It keeps me young, you know. I like it.
Excellent.
Well, Mara,
excellent.
We appreciate so much the work you are doing in your organization. And you mentioned that you are on Facebook and Instagram. That's a way people can get in touch with you and find out what you are doing. And for some folks who want the old-fashioned way, can you give us a phone number?
Sure.
And or a P.O. box if people want to send a donation.
I got it. So our phone number is 503-249-5801. And you can send a donation or come by at 1515 Northeast 41st, Portland, Oregon, 97232. And if anyone wants to receive our old school newsletters, I still do paper newsletters because, you know what, I respect all types of communication.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, because low-tech works best sometimes.
Absolutely. Well, low-tech works great for us. We have a lot of seniors who donate to us regularly, and they have for 30 years.
Amazing. Amazing work. Well, thank you so much, Mara, for the great work that you are doing in supporting families. And we just want our listeners to know that this is a great organization that you can support. The end of the year, if you want to give your tax, you know, your donation for tax purposes, or just because you want to be a good person, Mother and Child, great organization. Thank you so much for being with us, Mara, and we look forward, and thank you for the work that you and everyone who's working with you who are doing to build and support families.
Thank you so much for including me, so much.
And stay in touch, because we want to know what you're doing in the future. And if you got something really important you need to get the word out, well, you know you got an ear here at KBOO on More Talk Radio.
I will, Celeste. Thank you so much, and have a great morning.
You as well. Thank you so much. And
you Okay.
Well, go right ahead. Take it away, Cecil.
No, I'm just going to remind our listeners that you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO.FM. And this is, I am Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with my cohort, Celeste Carey, and we are featuring organizations who are making good, doing good in our community. And we just heard from an excellent organization, Mother and Child, which is featured in the Willamette Week Gift Guide. For more information, you may go there about what they are doing. And we'll let you catch your breath as we switch gears and speak with another person from another great organization who's doing great work in our community. Celeste, do you want to introduce them or should I?
You know, mouth all day, and you do the introduction and I'll do the questions. Or some of the questions, okay?
Okay.
We'll split it up a little bit more equitably this time.
All right. Well, next up is an organization that has been working tirelessly in as they say, spreading the fire and making good work and reaching out to Black and Brown communities within our metro area. And joining us is from Brown Hope is, and I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Solomon Erbe.
Hello. Good morning. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Good morning.
Solomon Erbe.
Good morning, Solomon. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Cecil introduced you. And both of us are familiar with one of the individuals who helped start Brown Hope. But tell us a little bit about Brown Hope and your involvement in it for those who have never heard of it but might be in need of the services.
Sure. Brown Hope as an organization has been around for a few years. It started with Cameron Whitten and Salome Chimuku. Brown Hope itself has five different kind of initiatives that it supports, one of which is the Black Resilience Fund, which has gained a lot of traction and notoriety through the earlier stages of the pandemic with a lot of giving. A lot of people came out to help support that, so it's grown exponentially, and we've been able to help a lot of families around in the Portland area by just passing those funds on to them. In the form of, like, you know, just checks, you know, $300 checks, just to kind of help people get through. And as I'm sure you could imagine, a lot of people were in need of that, so our intake system had been stretched to capacity for a long time, and at this point in time that application is closed, but we're still processing those applications and helping to get people the services that they need. Outside of the funds, we do also have a couple other programs that can serve people. The Brown Hope, it also does a Power Hour, which also gained some notoriety initially, as it was kind of the reparations happy hour kind of a thing that got some attention on the news. And that's just like an opportunity for folks to get together virtually these days, and you know, there'll be some speakers. Cameron's usually there talking about Brown Hope and maybe some relevant issues of the time. And it's a way that people can access also a little bit of money. Like, if you sign up for Power Hour, you'll get $35. So that's pretty cool. You get new folks and some returning people to that program every time. I think it's every other week. There's also the Black Street Bakery, which provides like vegan pastries, and they do really good work. There's Black Joy Weekend, which came about a couple of months ago when Proud Boys kind of descended on Portland to have a little rally, and there was like some threats that weekend. Brown Hope provided Black Portlanders another like $300 to be able to go and just enjoy themselves on the weekend and get out of Portland. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, there's Equity and Beyond, there's the Power Hour, Black Street Bakery, Black Resilience Fund, and yeah.
So it sounds like Brown Hope is kind of an umbrella effort that covers different needs for the Black and Brown community here in Portland. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Okay. And so people may not be familiar with the kind of needs that Portland's Black and Brown communities have. And, I mean, you've alluded to a couple of them, like basic physical safety and that coupled with mental health for the onslaughts that come from living in a, living in what's been called America's largest and whitest city, as uh-huh. well as just the stressors of not having enough money to take care of basic needs. Is it fair to say that the problem that you're trying to solve is really multifaceted then, that this is not a one issue organization, but it's more of a holistic organization that looks at the many needs of our Black and Brown, which encompass African, African American, Latino, and other folks of color communities. It sounds like it's trying to address holistically the challenges of surviving in Portland. Is that kind of an accurate way of putting it? Because I hear you mentioning quite a few different aspects of care.
Yes, that's definitely true. From the inception, there's been, you know, a desire to try and reach out and help people where they need it and not just be offering kind of like a blanket or a Band-Aid type of solution. I mean, that's partly where the idea of just kind of getting away from providing this or that service or trying to tell people what they need and just kind of give people money. Because when it comes down to it, like the economic disenfranchisement that our community has faced is a big part of a lot of those struggles that we're, you know, dealing with. So the idea of just like receiving donations and then passing them right on to applicants in the form of a check so that they can do with it what they will is a part of that. Because if you have some extra money, you're going to do with it what you need. You're going to either pay your bills if that's what you need. You're going to, you know, go buy some new clothes if that's what you need. Buy a new phone if that's what you need. Buy some gas if that's what you need. Take a trip and go see your family if that's what you need. Within the Black Resilience Fund, that's really all about like leaving it up to people to be determinant about what their greatest needs are and helping to facilitate that. I myself got involved with the organization when Cameron had put out a request for a mutual aid coordinator. So right now I'm on contract as the mutual aid coordinator. And the mutual aid component of Brown Hope and the Black Resilience Fund is comprised mainly of food box delivery. So when okay. folks do fill out their intake, that was one of the questions that they could select if they would need that type of resource. And many, many people did select that they would get some use out of a food box. So we've been working to meet that need as best we can. I think when everything first started, I think they were kind of maybe getting out about 300 food boxes a week. And then that kind of scaled down just because of the parameters around like the sourcing of those boxes from the city, I think it was. So when I came on board, we were delivering about 150 a week. But with about 1,500 people on the list that were asking for one. So with the goal of scaling up to about 1,000 a week, I came on board and just kind of helped troubleshoot through some problems, some logistical challenges, and trying to find a new food box partner, trying to find a warehouse space to facilitate the efforts, and working with our team of volunteers who have been doing the work to try and increase that up to help people get a food box at least like once a month, if not twice a month, so that the majority of our list is being served on a regular basis. So at this point, we're at around 500 or 600 a week.
That's
over
a
the
lot.
Over the recent, yeah, it is a lot. It is a huge effort too. You could.
And now, how much of that would you attribute to the pandemic, Solomon?
I mean, it seems that a lot of it is. We haven't necessarily been collecting all of that information from people as far as how did they find themselves in this current state of need. But if we just kind of go off of the fact that a lot of people are out of work and a lot of stuff is shut down, that the pandemic has a lot to do with people just being in need. So we also can't deny the fact that people have been in need, and that having a little bit of extra food delivered to your house is going to be a big help, like, you know, last year, 2 years ago, 10 years ago, and probably 4 years to come. Just that little bit of extra can go a long way to just relieving the stress in your house, making sure that you're able to provide healthy meals to yourself and your family, and you know, just giving you that extra little push that might be you know, well received.
Solomon, you know, as you were speaking, it reminded me of the adage, you know, when the white community sneezes, the black communities have pneumonia, and the fact that things might just be beginning to touch the majority community does not really say the depth and the intensity of the needs and the concerns of black and brown communities. In the bio we received about you, I was struck by the description of you as a futurist with a visionary with a passion for mobilizing our collective energy into real, sustainable, systemic change. And as you describe your work at Brown Hope, how is your work at Brown Hope helping you to create or be a part of mobilizing and creating sustainable systemic change?
Sure. Well, I would say that like when I came into the position, like it was mainly volunteer run at that point. So the efforts of many well-meaning folks were already kind of being directed towards, you know, assisting their neighbors. It's, you know, mainly a large group of white people who were dedicating their time very intentionally with the desire to help the black people in the community. And with that, I think it's really important to continue to build off of that kind of foundation out into the larger mainstream community, so that when opportunities to support the most marginalized and disenfranchised communities like the Black community are supported, because no matter what, even if all the Black people in Portland came out to vote for some ballot measure or a new law or something like that, they're not going to move the needle unless you have a good portion of the white population on board with it as well. So I feel like although the Brown Hope and the Black Resilience Fund is really about being self-sufficient as a community, being able to meet our own needs, and building the resilience that lies within our own community, we're not alone in the wider community, and we do benefit from the help of others. So in this position at this time, like, it's really about like mobilizing the assistance of the larger community and really trying to build off of that into our programs and making connections within our community to help foster that kind of ongoing and sustainable kind of change in mindset and change in interaction with each other, so that we can continue to be resilient in and amongst ourselves, but also fostering healthy relationships with the other communities around us, so that we all can benefit and uplift those of us who are struggling on the margins and feeling left behind.
I really appreciate hearing you say that, you know, because and along with what Cecil said in terms of phrases and anecdotes that describe our community, you know, they say if you raise the lowest boats, you know, then all of the boats will raise and raise their level. And in addition, if you strengthen the marginalized communities, then they're able to also strengthen. You know, they can comfort people with the same comfort that they've received. And yeah. That speaks tremendously to your profiles, you know, characterizing you as a futurist and looking for systemic changes that can be made to improve everybody's lot systemically. And I really, I so appreciate that. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm gushing, but basically I am, because that's the kind of thing we need to hear happening here in Portland, and not just in our community, but being able to plant that seed that ripples out some positivity on an exponential level. So thank you. Now, having said all that, let's get to the meat. How do people support your effort? Because you've laid out an excellent case here, and we want you to continue to thrive. So how do people connect with you, not only to support you financially, but to support you in other ways they can, whether it be by volunteering or offering mentoring services or peer-to-peer support? How do people reach you?
Yes, thank you. So outside of the kind of food box program, we do also have like a mutual aid program. We do have efforts geared towards providing mutual aid to folks that involves a lot of receiving of donations and then putting those into the hands of folks who need them. And so like donations of home goods and those kind of things all go a long way. House supplies as well as clothes. We need a lot of like men's and big boys clothes. We have a lot of stuff for ladies and children, but we don't have a whole lot of stuff for men and like, you know, bigger teenage boys, like size 12 shoes and that kind of thing. But you can reach us at brownhope.org, as well as blackresiliencefund.com. And within either of those, you could find links for how to donate, how to volunteer.
Excellent, excellent. And this is, you know, with the pandemic in effect, how do you interact with both donors and the people who you help and assist? Because I noticed that mother and child, so they have, did we lose our caller? Hello, Solomon? Okay.
Solomon has dropped out.
Okay. If we only have a few minutes more, but I wanted to get back, if you could, Sonia. So see if you might be able to reconnect.
On it.
And then what? All right. Thank you. Any thoughts, Cecil, while we're seeing if we can get Solomon back quickly?
Well, you know, among the things that occurred to me as Solomon was speaking, and especially in these past few months when you've seen a rise in awareness of Black and Brown communities, I think it's important to support BIPOC organizations, BIPOC-led organizations. And one thing that I found exciting about what Solomon was speaking about, among the work they are doing, is allowing people to say and do what they want with the aid and support they can give, so that people are in charge of what they want and what they need to do. Also, I noted the emphasis he had also placed on Black joy in terms of how important that was. And he's back with us right now. So thank you so much for hanging in there, Solomon.
Yeah, sorry about that. We got disconnected for a second. But I think I was just relaying our contact information with those websites, which is brownhope.org, resiliencefund.com. For folks who are seeking assistance, our applications are closed right now, unfortunately. We were overwhelmed with requests and are at this point still processing through a backlog of applications and working to meet those needs. So it's just not fair to continue to accept applications from people who really need help, knowing that we're not going to be able to even get to their application for a while. So if for the people who would like to help and have some time or have some goods to donate or some money, you can find that information on our website for sure. When it comes to our great needs, like we have needs of volunteers of all sorts, particularly drivers, for me and my efforts, we really need folks who have time to get out and drive and deliver our food boxes, and in with the desire to deliver 1,000 food boxes a week. That translates to a little more than 100 drivers per week.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot. On that holiday weekend, we were able to get out 976 food boxes.
That's impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So we were close. We were close to 1,000, and it was, I guess, mainly due to a lot of people not having anywhere to go for Thanksgiving, and not doing their usual Thanksgiving stuff, and having time off of work. A lot of people are, you know, back to work and doing things, but we do have Thursday morning shift that we usually do, and then we just opened up a Saturday morning shift, Saturday afternoon morning. It's going out at 12 noon right now, but we might make it a little bit earlier so people can get done and get on with the rest of their day. But yeah, it just takes about maybe 2 to 3 hours to deliver 8 to 10 boxes, depending on the size of your vehicle and the size of the route. We're doing a lot to optimize our routes to make them as easy as possible, and just kind of streamline the experience so people have a good time of it. We have a lot of dedicated folks who come back week after week, but we've also had a lot of kind of one and done, which is normal when
that's
it comes
okay.
to volunteering, but
that's
I'm
okay.
hoping that we can get some people out, you know, for, well, I mean, you know,
long-term.
If we have 1,000 people in line to do one and done, then that'll help, you know, but it would be nice if we can get some people to come out and drive, you know, maybe once a month or, you know, something like that when they have time.
Well, right. we're running out of time, so I want to get one more time for you to announce how people can connect with you and give us your low-tech and your high-tech ways of connecting once again.
Sure. Okay. So you can reach us at brownhope.org as well as the BlackResilienceFund.com. If you want to mail something to Brown Hope, P.O. Box 6807, Portland, Oregon 97228, and as well
as the phone number. Is there a phone number?
Yeah, you can reach Black Resilience Fund at 971-801-8951, and you can call or text that, and also email
right.
info@blackresiliencefund.com.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you so much for giving us time to share your work to help give back to Portland. And stay in touch, because if you've got something interesting or important or have a call to action, we are more than happy to give you our ear and our airways here at More Talk Radio at KBOO.
Yeah, sure thing.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you. You're very welcome. And we are
all
in
right.
the gift guide. I don't know if you guys mentioned that, but we're in the gift
oh,
guide.
Oh, yeah, that's why we're doing the interview.
Great.
So thank
yeah,
you
thank
for the
you.
Segue.
You guys have a good day.
You too. Well, that was a perfect segue. You know, as we mentioned
yeah.
at the top of the hour, this is about gift guide. And gift guide is the Willamette Week effort at not only giving back to Portland, but giving helping organizations a chance to highlight their efforts, to be showcased for the good work they do, and more importantly, to fundraise and sustain that effort. So
yes.
What can people do to be a part of Give Guide, Cecil? Well, I tell you what. Hey.
First Look Up Gift Guide. There are a great organizations, including KBOO, who have been featured and in different areas of social service and social actions that you can connect up with. If you go to their website, and you can even design what type of programs, what areas you want to focus on, and see a
yes.
multiplicity of organizations and areas of work and things that they are doing. So this is the end of the year. This is your opportunity to share that which you have with those in our community. And we heard today two great organizations, Brown Hope, which is highlighting the work of Black and Brown people and allowing them to decide their future, and Mother and Child, which is supporting and nurturing families wherever and however they are formed, and families with children. So these are just two of the many organizations that are a part of Gift Guide that you can be a part of and associate with. Great nonprofits. We are all are doing the work that we can, and you know there are 174 nonprofits
organizations.
Who are,
yeah,
who are featured there under one digital roof.
Yes, indeed. So we want to thank everybody for listening. We want to thank everybody for supporting KBOO, because look at this. Look at how your money has exponentially helped Portland. So when you have supported KBOO by becoming a sustaining member, you are supporting these other organizations as well. And if that's not a way to fight back the ominous, shall we say, a contrail of 2020. I don't know any other way to do so. You spend one penny, you throw your penny on the water, and look, it becomes $1 million to help 2 million people and more. So stay tuned to your community connection, not just tuned, but attuned, by helping those community organizations that we also partner with. So if you love the work we do, support us. If you love the work these other organizations do, support them. And by all means, participate in Willamette Week's Give Guide and their 2020 campaign.
So, thank you for being a
part. I just want to say thank you, and I want to send a shout out to our engineer Sonia for not only getting Solomon back quickly, but finding our old theme, because we have people who have even reached out and texted us and said, "Where's your old theme? We missed it. You got me puzzled, but we want to hear some mellow George Howard today." So thanks so much. This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Old Mo Variety Hour.
Have you gotten your flu shot? It's never too late to protect yourself, your family, and your community against the flu. This year, it is more important than ever. Black and African Americans, people of color, pregnant people, people without health insurance or a regular health care provider, people with pre-existing conditions like asthma, diabetes, and cardiovascular disease,